And today I wanted to simply share with you some stories about my own experience with this ordination to ministry. And some of these you may have heard before, but these are some of the stories that come to me in this time. I can't remember knowing any women pastors when I was growing up, but it's not like the idea was foreign or strange to me. I was raised in a privileged home and offered an excellent education, and I had internalized the message that I could do anything I wanted with my life. When I was 16, the pastor who had been my pastor for half my life asked me if I had ever considered ordained ministry. And I assured him, no, I had not. It was the farthest thing from my mind, and that I was going to go and become an architect. By the time I went off to St. Olaf College a few years later, in the Lutheran Mecca of Minnesota, I had decided to follow in my family tradition and become a teacher. But sometime during my college years, I realized that as much as I had kind of enjoyed math, I didn't want to spend my life talking about math. And when I explored what I did want to spend my life talking about, I realized that I wanted to focus on those things that give our life meaning. Our relationship with God and with one another, prayer and community, and the stories of faith that bind us together as God's people. And so shortly after I graduated, I went off to seminary. There in my early 20s, I was at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. And the ELCA put out a statement on sexuality, the first one, I believe. And it was a first step, perhaps, in a journey that would continue for almost 25 years. That journey for people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender to receive full acceptance and recognition in our church. But to be honest, it's a journey that still continues, as that welcome is still a matter of congregational choice. And my LGBT brothers and sisters who are prepared for ordination often wait for years to find a church that is willing to receive them. But back to 1995, a social statement came out, which, as I remember, suggested in a fairly mild way that perhaps LGBT folks could be accepted as congregation members as themselves, and all hell broke loose. And I say that intentionally, because I heard later on that the staff of the ELCA headquarters received such a quantity of vitriol and hate mail and even threats that some had to receive post-trauma counseling in the wake of that statement. I was at Luther Seminary, where we all found a letter in our mailboxes the day after the release of the statement. It was addressed to the ELCA from Luther Sem, stating that the seminary would not accept that piece of the statement on sexuality that might include LGBT folks. I remember the moment I read that letter. I was sitting at a table in the lunchroom, and as I read those words, spoken on my behalf about a community of which I was part, I felt a physical twisting in my gut, as if I'd been hit and the air went out of me. I knew deeply that it was wrong, but even more, I could feel in my body the truth that were it only 30 years earlier, that letter would be about me and all the amazing women who were with me at the seminary denied the ability to carry out our calls because the church had decided that we were not welcome or equal. That day, I joined with a group of other students in drafting our own response, which was also distributed in all the mailboxes. Isn't that quaint, looking back at that paper letter stuck in physical mailboxes? We asserted that in our reading of the gospel, all people are welcome in God's church, regardless of orientation or gender. We asserted that the seminary administration could not speak for the student body or faculty as a whole, and we dedicated ourselves to welcoming all our siblings in the community. I have been very fortunate in my 20 years in ordained ministry, serving in communities where professional women are the norm, and I've experienced little of the sexism or discrimination that many of my clergy colleagues face regularly. but I still carry that moment and others like it. Moments when the struggles of people of different sexual orientation or gender identity or color of skin or nationality have been singled out as unwelcome. And I have felt it, the outrage in my body and soul. This month is Gay Pride Month, and even though most of the events that celebrate Pride have had to be canceled this year, I still celebrate this month because I have been privileged in my life to witness the faith of my LGBTQ siblings who never gave up on the church, who never allowed anyone to tell them that the God they had heard call their name was not for them. I have been privileged to minister to young men dying of AIDS in the 90s. I have been privileged to spend my internship year in a church where there were only five of us who were white in the midst of an African-American congregation and neighborhood. I have been privileged to celebrate the wedding of two women in the very month that both the United States Supreme Court and the Episcopal Church declared it legal. And the ELCA followed just a few weeks later. I am privileged to be part of the struggle for equal recognition and inclusion of all my siblings in faith, a struggle which extends back well before my birth and will probably continue on past my death. The struggle against all the forces in our communities which would tell any child of God, gay or straight or bi, male or female or non-binary, black, white, brown, or any combination, that they are not beloved of God and welcomed in the community of God's people. That, my friends, is at the core of why I do this work of ministry, so that all people may know God's great love for them. And so I thank you, my brothers and sisters of All Saints, for your commitment to welcome and hospitality and justice. I thank you for the privilege to serve in ministry alongside you with all your faithfulness and generosity of spirit. I thank you, and I thank God for you. May we continue to welcome and grow and serve together in faith and love. Amen.